Well, everybody, it's Friday night, and we are going to discuss our favorite albums, our favorite books, and our favorite TV shows. We decided to do a list of our top five on each of those categories. So sitting with me is Roy Torres, 10 miles away. And sitting 5 miles away from me is Mike Cabrera, and I am Art Medina, and this is another edition of Why We Drink, and you can listen to us at Why
Welcome to Why We Drink.
Art, that's kind of
so. How are you guys?
That's inaccurate, actually, Art, because I got to say, it feels like you're sitting right next to me. Yes, sir.
Well, I hope you. I hope you smell my farts.
For those who don't know, I'm on cannabis gummies.
Oh, is that alcohol. What you're doing?
Yes, sir.
Did I tell you?
You kids, you stay away from those drugs.
Right. So you would come over in the past, and you would be like, hey, do you want this edible? And you'd like leave edibles with me. And I'm like...
Yes, I know. You told me this story. You ended up, you weren't eating, you just hid them.
So I started to wonder, like, because the last time I took one of those, and I just nibbled at it. I did not eat the whole thing. Uh-huh. Time stopped for me. I time traveled. I was like going back and forth in time. It was really weird.
You were going back and forth.
No, I mean, seriously. I was on a telephone call, and I was responding to stuff. Like before the person on the other side was asking it, it was weird. So anyway,
yeah.
I started to wonder who's putting these edibles together? Like, are they just like, are they like mixing a vat of shit? And they're like, oh shit, did I put the pot in? Okay, all right, hold on. I'm going to put the pot in now.
Hey, who's human? Who? All right, so why are we here?
Okay, so we're going to talk about our five favorite albums, our five favorite books,
music,
and then our five favorite TV shows. So, have you got them in any particular order? Does anybody have them in any particular order?
We should start.
I thought you said favorite bums.
J-Lo. I'm going to go J-Lo.
She is a bum.
Buster Keaton.
All right. They sound a bum. All right. Art, do you want to start off?
So do we want to go from 5 to 1, or do we want to go from number 1 to number 5?
Mine are in no particular.
Okay.
5 to 1.
No. Yeah, mine are mine are in particular order. I take that back.
Okay,
yes,
then. So for for the top five albums, my number five is "Escape" by Journey, the one that's got "Don't Stop Believing."
Ooh.
Yeah, I don't know why, but that particular album of Journey, sort of like started to it sort of changed the way that I listened to music, because remember at that time when it came out in 1981. It literally was the start of this mixture of music that was like disco and hard rock mixed together. Even though it wasn't either of those two things, it was just this brand new style of music. And so when they sang songs like "Open Arms" and "Lights," "Don't Stop Believing," it was like they were like anthems. Actually, they were like they were calling to you to listen.
They were for the White Sox.
And I love that album.
Was it Any Way You Wanted?
No.
On that album?
That was Infinity.
That was an Infinity, right? Exactly.
Okay. That was great artwork.
Should have been gone.
Really great. It was a bug.
Art's penis.
I'll tell you this one. If you were somebody that liked that album, then you were cool. For whatever reason, you liking the album of Journey's "Escape" made you cool.
Oh, okay.
They even made a video game, an Atari 2600 video game of.
No,
remember that?
No. They made an arcade video game that was in arcades. From remember Journey's the one with Separate Ways. They took photographs of all of the members' heads, and they put them on digital bodies, and then like one of them had a guitar, and you would like shoot little balls at other things. The album was called Frontiers, and there was a game made as the album came out called Frontiers. And as you played the game, they would play the songs from the album. Do you remember this?
Wow.
I don't remember. I don't remember that at all, but okay, I believe you.
I think I remember more of a pinball game.
No, it was a video game, kind of like Tron, where you remember in Tron's game where you would like shoot discs at these colored blocks as they come toward you? In the same way Journey did that. Mm-hmm. That was like that type of a game. Do you want me to send this to you?
No, I'll remember.
But I want to say that Journey was one of my favorite bands in high school. Like that was my go-to band. I love Journey. I had all their albums.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever go to a concert?
I never did.
I never went to any of their concerts. No. And of course, we're talking about Journey when they had Steve Perry on.
Yeah.
Of course,
Steve Perry. Now wait a minute. Escape was the last time Steve Perry had half his voice. If you go to the album before Escape and every album prior to that, his voice was immaculate. It was like by the time we got to Escape, it started getting raspy. It was like, should have been gone. Happy. But before then, it was...
Hey, what about Lights?
Lights was Infinity.
On?
It was and that... was prior to, that was when his voice was still good. His voice was just immaculate. That guy had such an incredible voice.
Yeah, that was really good.
So who's up? Me?
Yes. Okay,
coming up with albums, it was super difficult. I had a very hard time dealing, because I came up with a top 17. And so I'm going to read to you. Oh, man. All right. So I'm going to read to you my. I guess I'll call this the honorable mention category.
Sure.
Because all of these were meaningful to me and powerful. But if I had to throw the top five, they didn't reach that top five. So if you'll allow me to read from 17 to 5. Number 17 in my top 17 albums was an album called In My Tribe by the 10,000 Maniacs. I used to be a member of the RCA Record Club. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, yeah.
But
penny gets you 12 cassettes.
I'm a little familiar with it. I just can't remember a lot of it.
Okay. So what happened was there was a thing. And they were like, hey, if you give us a penny, we will give you like 10 albums for free.
We'll take your soul.
And then we'll charge you $15 a month, and we'll send you an album every month. You choose the album. And you're like, cool. So, like, you would choose, like, the first whatever albums out of a list. And so, at one point, I went to Roy and I said, hey, Roy, here's a bunch of people that I don't know about. Have you ever heard of the 10,000 Maniacs? And he was like, oh, yeah, they're great. So, I chose this album as one of those albums, not knowing anything about them. This was their first album, and it was phenomenal. It was what's her name? Natalie Merchant. An amazing voice. Natalie Merchant.
Yes.
And she not only was super talented, but she was super shy. She recorded that album in pitch black. She had all the lights out. And she said, I'm so, you know, shy. I don't want anyone to see me sing. Turn all the lights out and I'll sing. And I love that about her because I felt like I connected with her. So that was a great album. I loved it, absolutely. The Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Fever to Tell. I don't know if you're familiar with them. Very punk and...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I only know one song of theirs.
Mosquito? No? Okay.
I think... Is it Wait?
Oh.
Wait, they don't know you. What the fuck is this song called? Ah, forget
it. All right, so number 15, the U2's Joshua Tree was an amazing album. Number 14 needs a little bit of an explanation. There was a time in my life where I was super religious. Between the two of you, Roy would know this more than anybody. Uwe and Tony would come over to my house and try and convince me of that, like, Jesus wasn't real, and, like, why should I be Christian? So this, during that time period, I was into Christian rock. And this was an album which was, to me, it was a weighty album to me because it was meaningful spiritually. From where I was, the artist's name was Rich Mullins, and the album was called A Liturgy, A Legacy, and A Ragamuffin Band. Amazing music to me. It was very touching. 13 October Project was the name of the band. It was a self-titled album. I found them from an independent radio station in Des Plaines, I think. There used to be a 92.7 was called The Bear. I used to listen to them all the time. And they would have these giveaways. They're like, hey, we give away this free album to the fifth caller. And then I'd call and I'd win constantly. In fact, I would be the only guy calling. I'd be like the fifth caller out of five calls. I'd call once, twice, three, four, five times. I won. And so I started loving this artist called October Project, and at some point Roy and Tony I took you to a concert where they were playing, and it was a bar. I don't know if you remember, but we all went.
No.
And we saw this group, and I loved it. You guys were probably nonplussed. You guys did you don't remember, obviously, but I took you to see them. And I love this album. Number 12, Led Zeppelin 4. Amazing album. Every song on this album was awesome. Number 11, Neutral, Milk, Hotel, In the Airplane Over the Sea. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's folksy. It's a beautiful... The guy's voice, I don't know. Everything about this album I love. Number 10, band called Innocence, Mission. The album's called Glow. Number 9, there's a band called Sigur Rós. This is an Icelandic band. And in the way that the Cocteau Twins, are you familiar with them?
No.
Yes.
So the,
they did Carolyn's Fingers, right?
Do you know who... what's the word?
If you're going to say Aurora, yes, I know who Aurora is. Or Bjorn.
Bjork or Bjorn?
Oh, did I say it wrong? Bjork?
Yeah.
Okay, Bjork. I know her.
She was with the she was with the sugar cubes.
Yeah, she's awesome also.
Did we lose?
But there was another band. Let me back up. So Sigur Rós is an Icelandic band, and they do a thing that also the Cocteau Twins had done, where they feel like music is a language. You're right? Like, you strum a guitar, you blow a note in a trumpet, and you're speaking a language, but you are not saying a word, right? And why should it be the same way with your mouth? So they would say things in the way that the ska and the bebop, you know, like the oldie time, like bebop, a loobop, a bop, 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 bop. Like, they would say things, but it's just meant to enhance the music. It wasn't a word or a thought. And so those bands would use, like, gobbledygook, gibberish, in their lyrics to sing a song. So Cocteau Twins did that, and so did Sigur Rós. And they did an album called... Now, the album that they did was not in English. It was also entitled in Icelandic, but the interpretation of the title was, "With a buzz in our ears, we play endlessly." And it was phenomenal. That album was awesome. Number...
What? I'm sorry.
It's called Sigur Rós. S-I-G-U-R. Sigur and Ross. Okay. R-O-S. Amazing. In fact, do you remember the movie How to Train Your Dragon 2?
No.
I didn't see the third one.
No, no, two. Number two.
Okay, I think I saw the third
you
one.
You both
yes.
came to my house to watch it in a backyard movie night. We had a backyard movie night, How to Train Dragon, and then Roy turned to me and goes, and you said, oh, there's a number two? And I was like, let's watch it. And we watched the both of them.
Did he lose his leg by
then? Yeah, he lost his leg by the first movie.
In this version?
Yeah. So in the second movie,
all right. Yes, I'm up to speed.
The guy who I'm talking about in Sigur Rós, who is goes by the name mm-hmm. Jonesy, did the music for that movie.
Hmm.
Okay, so number eight, Depeche Next. Mode, "Music for the Masses." How do you not love that album?
Hmm. Well, great choice. Well done.
And then number seven.
Well done.
Counting Crows against August and Everything After. That was an amazing album. And number six, REM's Document. That was a fucking awesome album. That one had, this one goes out to The One I Love. That one had The End of the World and We Know It. It was just an incredible album.
Oh, this is the end of the world as we know.
Every song. So my top five albums. Now that we get to the top five, every song was awesome. On the album, every song touched me in a way. You know, a lot of times you see these albums and you're like, there's one or two songs and they're awesome, but then the rest of it's shit. But my top five, every song, awesome. Okay, number five, Ben Folds. The album is called Ben Folds.
Ben Folds 5.
Ben Folds 5. It's a self-titled album called Ben Folds 5. Every song was awesome.
Is it Freshman on one? Was Freshman on that
no.
one?
No. Freshman? No.
We Were Merely Freshmen?
No, that's not Ben Folds at all.
All right. Who is that?
I don't know, but I know the song you mean. Let me see. Hold on.
We Were Merely Freshmen. Can't be held responsible. Love in the First Place.
That's called the Verve pipe.
Damn it! Okay, got it. All right,
go on.
So that's it. Number five, Ben Folds, self-titled. Ben Folds 5, self-titled. That's my number five album. Thank you for indulging me in the rest.
No problem, man. Next.
Who wants to go next? It should be. Wait, do you want Mike to go next, or do you want to go next, Roy?
Mike did okay. Is Ben Folds.
Okay, then
5.
So I did mine. So he did. You hit. So it's
me. Okay, sorry. All right. Substance. Nice. New Order. They had their songs. A few of their songs remastered, and they had a few new ones.
Is that the same album? Is that the same album that had Age of Consent?
I believe
that's
it
one
did.
Of the better songs ever.
I think it was. Yeah, it was, and they remastered it. Like I said, great. Whoever produced that album, fantastic job, great job. All the songs are awesome. I like this remastered version better than the original ones that they
really?
Put out. So, I love this album a lot. It was very dance too, danceable. It was danceable. Yeah.
Next. Okay then. So number four for me. Is Cowboy Junkies The Trinity Sessions. It's a Canadian band. No one's ever heard of them.
I have.
The thing is that they were popular because of one song from that album, and that was Sweet Jane. And not a lot of people
a
lot of people know this about the album, but the reason why it was called The Trinity Sessions is because what they did was that they went to a Trinity Church in Canada. And they actually had just one microphone, and they gathered around that microphone in a circle. And then what they did was they just started to play their instruments and recorded all of those songs at the same time. And one of the songs that they sung that day was Sweet Jane. And it's legendary because of the fact that they say that they did the entire album in one day. They actually did it in a couple of days.
Whoa.
But still, it was a feat of just pure acoustic engineering. At the same time, it's a great album to listen to, even though it's very obscure. Not a lot of other people know about the other songs in the album. But it was that one album in my life that started the 1990s for me, even though it came out in 1988, and I would consider it a part of the 80s decade.
Natural Born Killers,
yes.
Right? You said, was it? It's the first time I heard that. That was a good
song.
What else did they do? Not
mainstream. In fact, I think that if anybody remembers the Cowboy Junkies, it's for that version of Sweet Jane only.
Did they write that, or is that a
cover? It was a cover of a Lou Reed song from Velvet Underground.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Interesting.
Okay, Mike, what's your number four?
Number four, an album called Exile in Guyville by Liz Phair, a Chicago native. It was completely raw and unfiltered look into her personal life. In fact, if you bought the album and you looked at like the sleeve art, there's a picture of her topless, and I think that goes to show, how much she's willing to just reveal herself, and in the music it follows through. It's really powerful, her lyrics. And, there's a song about...
What famous songs are on there? Never Said Nothing?
So the, I don't know if it was popular, if any songs came out, but 6 Foot One, Help Me Mary, Glory, Dance of the Seven Veils, Never Said, Soap Star Joe, Explain It to Me.
Never Said. That's the one.
Fucking right.
I love that song. Never Said Nothing.
That's a great song.
It's a great album. The whole album was front to back awesome.
Yeah. I always thought, when I first heard that song, Mike, I thought it was a guy. I mean, because she had that type of voice.
There was a, you know, B96? In Chicago.
Yes, unfortunately.
We had a couple of popular radio stations. And then at some point, I don't know if they, like, gave up. Like, oh, we don't know what to do anymore. Fuck it. I don't know. Let's just hire anybody. They hired these two dudes, the stoner dudes. And they were like, hey, everybody, it's us. We're going to play some music. And I don't remember the names. Let's just call them Badger and the Knuckle.
Like, it's not Eddie and Jobo.
No, but it was just two knuckleheads. And they happened to know Liz Phair. And so they would get her to show up on their during their show, and she would guest star on the show.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, part of why I love this album is that she was so accessible. She was vulnerable and accessible, and the music, like, touched me in the way that I needed at that time.
I wonder if the TGs were Carlos and the Chicken. Huh. All right. Who's next?
It would be you, Roy.
Oh. My next is Stealing Beauty soundtrack, various artists. So this movie is about a girl who travels to Italy and, like, in the vineyards and stuff like that to find out who her father is. Her father, several of these guys that are at this vineyard is her father. So she wants to know who. At the same time, she wants to lose her virginity. But as you follow her story, there are these cool songs. You have this jazz song on there. You have John Lee Hooker who's on there. And then who's that guy? Sings "No, I Will Never Fall." No,
Chris. Chris.
Thank you, Chris Isaac. Chris Isaac. Yeah, yeah. So you have these various artists on the song that fit the mood for each scene perfectly. And just this, even if that movie didn't exist, and it was just this album on its own, it's a great album to sit and listen to at night where you're having a drink or you're with a chick or you're having dinner and you have some kind of like ambient music in the background. This is a great album to listen to.
Nice. Okay, mm-hmm. So number three for me is "Lost in Space" by Amy Mann. It's we all know that I love Amy Mann, but the thing is that this was her second.
She has a restraining. Is that restraining order?
Besides that, now it's no longer it's no longer legal in Illinois.
Look out,
anyways, so we all know that Amy Mann was part of Voices Carry in 1985, but she never. The band of Till Tuesday that sang Voices Carry never really became mainstream, which kind of forced her to write her own work and then eventually create her own label. And she broke off with her record company, and as a result, she developed this sound that is called the LA music sound, and I think it resulted in her masterpiece called Lost in Space. None of you know of any of the songs in that album, but every single one of those songs in there is incredibly beautiful and a little bit on the depressing side, but it's sung from the perspective of a girl who's heartbroken and then at the same time looking for her independence. It's a great album. I love that album.
Were two of the songs in
Magnolia? No, in fact, because she did music for Magnolia... She actually thought to herself, "Well, I think I could become a solo artist if I can write more songs." And she did. She eventually made more songs, and she released the album "Lost in Space."
Whoa! Because those two songs that she did in Magnolia were standout.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, in fact, she was nominated for an Oscar for one of those songs. Yeah.
No shit.
She didn't win. She should have.
Who did she lost lose to?
Phil Collins, who did that song for Tarzan.
Oh. Exactly. For fuck's
Thank
sake.
You very much. Ah, he deserved it. Yeah, if anybody deserves everything next. They got is Phil Collins. All right, Mike.
The heart.
Next. What? Is Bon Jovi?
What's it?
Is Bon Jovi what's your happening? Next album?
So let's see.
Yeah, what's your next All album, right. Mike?
Prepare yourselves, Negroes.
No, I've already said
one. Number
I
three.
I said mine already.
Nobody's asking you. Okay, number three.
No, what's your number three? I already said what my number three was.
I'm trying to, if you shut the fuck up. Like, I can tell my number three. Okay. Number three. Richard Pryor's Bicentennial N-Word. I can't say the word.
I've never heard this.
Richard Pryor had an album in 1968 called Bicentennial N. I can't say the word because I'll probably get fired from every job I'm ever going to have in the future. But.
Oh, yeah, we lose our Asian audience, too.
But the very last track on that album, Pryor, if you're not familiar with Richard Pryor, Richard Pryor is to comedy what like Lenny Bruce was. Like he changed what it was because Richard Pryor like emerged in a time where racism and like all of comedy was reinvented after he started like his what's the word once he began to emerge as a comedian several stages of comedians after him came. So in his final track on Bicentennial N-Word, he pretends to be a slave coming across the ocean during the time of slavery. And he's like, yeah, I used to be a king, but now I'm on this ship. And he does it in a way that where he's like, constantly laughing, like, I used to be a king. And today I'm here with you. Like that. And, like, it was so powerful. And it was in the voice of comedy that it's difficult not to rank this album as, like, one of the top 10 albums of all time. Richard Pryor was probably one of the fearless, most inventive, creative voices of his time. So much so that he paved the way for a Dave Chappelle and
Murphy.
Eddie Murphy. Like his comedy was in the same vein, if not more so, than what's his name? Lenny Bruce. So this has to be in my top five albums. Richard Pryor was awesome. There's no topping that dude. All right, who's next?
Fair enough.
Roy is.
Me? All right. My next is Legacy, David Bowie. Legacy is a compilation of all of Bowie's greatest hits. I think it's spread out amongst two CDs for what you for you, all you kids out there. Those are these little shiny round things we used to put songs on. It spans two CDs. And I love this because it, all these songs are my favorite songs of his. I love Bowie. Not in that way you think. I mean in a homosexual way. I love Bowie. Great musician, songs, lyrics, the way they were produced. These songs I love each and every single. You know, there's a song when you listen to an album, like, I'll skip that one. I'll skip that one. I don't like that one. I love this one. But his song, every single song, I noticed I didn't skip any of those songs when I listened to this album. Because I love all of them the same.
Hey, Roy, have you ever heard a song that he did for a movie called Absolute Beginners? It was the title song.
No.
That is one of my favorite David Bowie songs ever. I love listening to that song. But I don't think it's any part of any
Absolute
album.
Beginner?
Yeah, it's called Absolute Beginners. He was in the movie.
Remember he did Falcon and the Snowman?
No, I remember that he did the Falcon and the Snowman, yeah. Actually, that's a pretty deep dive into a song that he did for that movie.
This is Not America, he did. But the one you're talking about, he was in
that it was
movie,
called Absolute Beginners. I think it was 1986. It was a British movie. Yeah.
No shit.
Well, you know, he was an actor too. Oh. Not a very good one, but he was an actor too, yeah.
Right. He's in Cat People, right?
Oh, he did the song for Cat People. He wasn't in it.
I thought he was in Cat
People. No, that's
People.
Malcolm McDowell.
Was he in a vampire
movie?
He was in the
movie
80s?
The Hunger. Yeah.
Thank you. Oh. Okay. All right. How was
Which
that?
Which one, The Hunger? It was directed by Ridley Scott's brother, Tony Scott, the guy who eventually went on to do all of the Tom Cruise movies like Days of Thunder and Top Gun. Yeah. Yeah.
No shit.
It was one of his very first movies. It's very atmospheric, but not a very good movie. Okay, so number... So everybody's had their turn. So we're moving on to number... What is it, number three?
Two?
Yeah, number two. Yeah, number two. Okay, then. So my pick for top album, top five albums, so number two, is Eagles' Greatest Hits Volume 2.
I knew it!
Now, the thing is that album was released in 1982, and it was just pretty much a compilation of all of their popular songs into one album. But it's still quintessentially Eagles at their finest and at their best. And you can't go wrong with any of these songs that are in that album, especially the first one, which is Hotel California, because that one song, it seriously is the signature of the 1970s. If you were to just put that song on, you immediately know that it was the 1970s. The bands at the time were still stuck to the 60s in this radical, hippie, stylish way. That knew that it was slowly dying and it was giving one last cry before it actually faded into obscurity. But they did not die into obscurity. In fact, the Eagles went on forever.
You know, you never heard Hotel California, Art, until you've heard Art Eagles.
Oh, my God. I still remember that night.
I was there.
I was there.
You were there?
When he started to sing, I looked over at you, and for the moment, we actually thought to ourselves, I think we could kill him. I think this is where we can kill him.
I'll hold your
drink.
No one
would blame
us. Yeah, Iggy is this guy we know with this thick Russian accent. So he was karaoke-ing. God knows why he chose that song. But there was a part there, he goes, such a lovely place. Such a lovely place!
The funny thing is that he knew of the song. He just didn't know how to sing the song.
Well. I won't get into that.
All right, Mike.
But it was funny.
Mike, what's your number two?
Wait, hold on, Art. Was one of these nights on that album
Yeah, One of These Nights.
One
Lying Eyes is in that song. Lying Eyes. Desperado, surprisingly, is not in that album.
Whoa! Yeah.
No.
Was not? Oh, and that would have completed it. Like, wow. One of these nights.
New Kid in Town?
Spotify.
There's a new kid in town.
There's new kid in town. Everybody
the
loves
new kid in town. Everybody
in town. Okay, sorry. All right.
Mike?
Number two? Yes, done. Number two. The Beatles' White Album.
No, really?
I feel like the Beatles, at the point when they came out with the White Album, had been reinventing themselves from this like poppy, campy band of music that was sort of like "She Loves You," yeah, to something more deep and meaningful.
Was Sgt. Pepper?
Sgt. Pepper.
Oh, that? I thought Sgt. Pepper was that.
Well, no, believe it or not, the White Album was released after Sgt. Pepper.
Oh. Yeah, so like the White Album felt like I'm watching a band morph into something greater. Like this is what it means to evolve as a musician. Like a lot of bands put out shitty music over and over, like the Eagles, like over and over. The shitty music.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, but they never evolve.
Motherfucker.
It never changes into something else. And the Beatles they were fucking masters at that. Like they kept coming out with these more and more complex ideas and musical themes that other bands just couldn't compare with, especially the Beach Boys. Like those fuckers, they were always like meh 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 meh, and the Beatles were just constantly becoming more like so
growing, yeah. Evolving.
So like I feel like the White Album was the pinnacle of that, and they kept going. So one of the all time favorite albums, White Album.
What songs are, well, I know all of them are good, but is there a song or songs that stand out?
The White Album.
Well, one thing for sure, the one song that's in there that I remember listening to all the time was a song called Julia, which was a song that John Lennon wrote about his mom.
Oh.
Yeah, but if I remember correctly, wow. Blackbird was in that album. I think Obladi Oblad. Oh. While My Guitar Gently Weeps is in that song. I mean, it's in that album.
Oh!
No, yeah. It's actually a great song.
Obladi Oblada.
Obladi Oblada.
Bungalow Bill. While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Blackbird is awesome.
I love that.
Rocky Raccoon.
Oh, yeah. Julia. Blackbird. You know, believe it or not.
Birthday.
That song, I thought that Blackbird was written like way, way before, like at the time when they were doing the I Love You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah kind of stuff. But no, it was written late in their career, right after Sgt. Pepper.
Helter Skelter.
Revolution.
Helter Skelter. We say you.
Oh, wait a second. Isn't Back in the USSR in that album?
Yeah, he
He did. Oh,
back in the U.S. Back in the U.S. Is that that one? That's all. You know.
Yeah, that's the first.
I didn't even roll that.
That's
one
the
down.
First song on that album.
Oh, how cool!
Wow.
I
heard that in the '80s, I want to say, or seventies, but I didn't even know that was them. I was thinking that doesn't sound like the Beatles.
No, man, they changed their ways all the time.
Yeah. Okay, who's who's next?
Guitar Gently Weeps.
Who's up?
Who's up? Art? Me?
Roy?
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
Is it me?
Number two.
Okay. All right. All right. Sacre Bleu by Dimitri from Paris.
What? He is used to be with Delight, and then he went off on his own, named Dimitri, and he put together this kind of like, oh God, how to describe it? It's lounge music with house and with a French accent to it. And it's experimental. Yeah, it's one of those laid-back, stoned, just chilling kind of songs. You're just there getting high with some chick, and you just listen to the music, and you just stone out, and just listen to his experimental sounds and the vocals. There's a couple, maybe there's one or two dance songs in there. Yeah. Love this album.
I don't think I've ever heard it. Was any of their songs or any of their music in something mainstream, like a movie or a TV show?
No. I only know this because I was dating this chick back in 2000, and she said, "Oh, I was in Paris," and I picked up this the CD, Dimitri from Paris. I was at a restaurant. I was saying, "Oh, let's hear it," and I listened to it. And I was thinking, man, this is the goddamn greatest album I ever heard in my life. But until this another album came along and knocked it out of the number one spot.
Okay, so
but that's
enough. We're at I'll number wait. One, Don. So for me, my number one album, music album, Rubber Soul by the Beatles.
What's that
one, it's like Baby, You Could Drive My Car, Norwegian Wood, In My Life.
Oh.
Right. The thing about that particular album is that it certainly was it was released in 1965. And it was at that time when the Beatles just decided to stop being the Beatles and become the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's difficult to say, okay, but remember how they were a boy band at the start of their career and all the girls were running after them?
Right.
They eventually says, okay, look, we're more than that. So they started to write deeper meaning songs that were influenced by Bob Dylan and by jazz and all this other stuff that they were brilliant at knowing. And eventually they said, this is who we are. And here's what happened. When they did that, not only did they change music, but they changed themselves. And when they did that, when they turned that page in their history, they literally turned the page to the way the world was at the time and created a culture. You can't think of the 60s, especially the conclusion of the 60s, without realizing what a tragedy it was for the Beatles to break up in a 7-year career that will last 1,000 years.
Thank you, Yoko Ono.
Was this album the beginning of them evolving into the White Album and Sgt. Pepper's, or was their album prior to this one where they started?
This album, Rubber Soul, because even the title itself, Rubber Soul, just basically meant that they were expanding themselves. That led them to make music like in Sgt. Pepper, in Magical Mystery Tour, in White Album, in Revolver, all of that. This is the start of it.
Cool. Well, the Beatles could do no wrong.
I agree. Mike, what's your number one?
Am I up?
Yeah.
All right. number one. So this is difficult because my number one favorite artist didn't make an album. Instead, he recorded songs that eventually became albums. And it was more of a period of radio where you'd publish something and like people would hear you and then you would go and you'd be on tour. The guy's name was Fats Waller. And eventually, Fats Waller had done an album like after his heyday. It would have been Honeysuckle Rose or Ain't Misbehavin', but Ain't the 30s.
Was Miles Davis in his band?
No. He died in his before he hit 40. He was in his 30s. He caught the flu. Whoa. He was on tour. But one of the most memorable stories about his touring was that he was in Chicago, and he was doing a show, and he was leaving the show when he was kidnapped. A group of men just like put a bag over his head, and they shoved him in a car. And next thing he sees, he's in front of a piano, and they're like, by gunpoint, told him to play music. And he realized that he was at Al Capone's birthday party.
Whoa.
Wow. And he was just happy not to be murdered, you know? But
wow. This stuff is amazing. I think I've heard of the story. Yeah, I heard the story too. And didn't he make more money in tips than when he was playing piano on a regular basis, whatever he was doing?
Yeah, that makes sense. That's probably true. But he was just happy not to be dead.
Fucking Capone, man. that crazy.
That but Italian bastard.
But his music is great. And I really love, his albums. So Fats Waller as the dude. Number one. Who's next?
Yeah, Roy, you're next.
Okay. Number one is 101, Depeche Mode.
Nice.
It's their a live concert in Pasadena. And so one of the best live concerts I've ever heard. And also, obviously, the best album I have ever heard. Every song is beautifully done. The vocals, you say Steve Perry was at his peak with his voice. David Gahan was at his peak with his voice. That's when all the band members were together before that. I forgot the organist left or whatever. But, they were just, all the plans were aligned with that album. Great arrangement, music, I don't know, production, the voice, everyone was right on.
That album was recorded from their live concert, you say, right?
Yeah, Pasadena.
Okay, so all of the songs concert. That they sang in that concert were they okay, all live. Right, cool. All right, so there was like nothing new in the album.
Yeah. No, it was it was just I forgot what tour they were going on for this album. Or maybe they were just doing all their songs from their albums. But whatever it was, Pasadena concert.
I remember that I
wonder if it was the music for the.
I remember that
tour.
I gave Claudia for her birthday like a DVD that was called Depeche Mode 101. So it was also a DVD. It wasn't just an album; it was also a DVD. Oh, okay, so that's probably what I gave her.
Yeah. It's I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but you should really give it a listen to. Fantastic.
All right, I will.
Fantastic.
I promise I will.
Yeah.
Okay, so all right, so that was it for best music. So we can go on to books and we could go on to TV show if we want to. Is that what we want to do or should we call it a night? That's an hour now.
Treat it to me.
So the top 10.
All right, who's starting on this one?
Hold on a second. For some reason I'm getting a call from Art. Hello.
Arch. Hey, I'm sorry. For whatever reason, my call dropped.
Okay, Arch back. Anyways, I think Arch should go first. Art, what's your best book? Okay. Favorite book?
Okay, all right. I'm going from number 5 to number 1, and I'm just going to read them off, okay?
All of them?
I don't have to go into a deep dive in them. Yeah, why not?
Because, okay, whatever you want.
Okay, because we're also going to start talking about favorite TV movies, TV shows, right?
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So number 5, my favorite book of all time from number 5 to number 1. Number 5, Catcher in the Rye, Once again, I think that's a cliche. I don't know why everybody loves this book. It's not a big deal.
And yet it's your favorite?
But the thing about it is that I think that it's just out of reputation alone, anybody who reads the book has some type of a connection to it, to the point where they say, I either relate to it or I don't relate to it. I'm one of the few that doesn't relate to it. But I find it fascinating because of how historical this book has become, not only because of who wrote it, but because of why it was written and about who it was written about. Eventually, it just becomes a legendary book to know and to have read and to be a part of, even though I really can't relate to it. Number four, Grapes of Wrath. It's by John Steinbeck. That's the one book that if you read it, it's very depressing, but it does talk significantly about a moment in American history that I think is repeating itself now. We are going to go through a Great Depression, and Grapes of Wrath was about that Great Depression and about the separation between the rich and the powerful against the poor. And that's going to happen now. You watch. Number three, 1984. 1984, which is just by George Orwell, and it's just one of those dystopian futures that essentially says, look at what happens when dictatorship and totalitarianism and fascism overtake your consciousness. They will win you over and then kill you because that's the point of your existence, to always love them and to appreciate them and to obey them. But remember, they will kill you and you will love them for it. Yes.
You know, Orwell stole that idea from a Macintosh commercial.
The movie Emma?
Just so you know.
They stole everything from the movie Clueless. All right. Number two, The Handmaiden's Tale. If you read that book, you just cannot believe that any of what happens in that book can happen.
I know, I don't.
Everything that we've seen in the course of the last 50 years in America has led to the belief that, yes, not only can it happen, but there are men in this world that want to happen, that happen in that book, to happen in real life.
Yeah, me included.
And then number one.
Oh.
Huh?
What? What's happening?
Okay, number one, To Kill a Mockingbird, the greatest American novel ever written. That book is all about innocence and about how innocence is twisted by people who hate.
Like Roy.
And the only redeemable fashion is that the innocence will always win over the hate, but only because of guardian angels like Boo Radley. Okay, so those are my... No, I honestly could not... I could not bring myself to read the sequel. Yeah, I heard that all the characters are racist.
Did you hear about it?
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Okay, so like, Mike, what are yours?
Okay.
Top five. Number five, Martin Eden by Jack London. Jack London did a book that was kind of autobiographical. It was called Martin Eden.
Mike, what was the name of the book?
Yeah, Eden. It's about a sailor that
Martin Eden.
He falls in love with this socialite.
Okay.
And to try and impress her, he wants to be a writer. And he becomes a very famous writer. And everybody who used to think of him as a clod now thinks of him as great. And he has a problem dealing with people that were so... The idea that somebody would think that you were an idiot and then the next day think you're great because of what other people think weighed so heavily on him that he commits suicide. Which is basically the blueprint of Jack London's real life. And the reason it makes sense to me, the reason that I love the book so much is that when I was in high school, I had an English teacher that made us read this book. And I hated reading. Like, I just hated reading. And no, but I mean, like, books. So he would have us read chapters.
Even comic books?
And, like, we would come to school and we would discuss the chapter. And he would frame it. And, like, do you remember when they met on that bridge? It was raining out. And the two men fought. And they were punching each other on this bridge. And it was so significant because blah, blah, blah. And, like, he made it into a story that made sense. While I was reading it, it was stupid. But, like, when I was looking at it through his eyes, it was awesome. And probably that's why it was a great book to me. Not because of it touched me in some way, but because it showed me how I should be reading books. So, Martin Eden. Oh, yeah, okay. Here we go. Number four, the Bible. No book has ever touched me in such a way
that
changed my life as the Bible. I read it. There are 66 books. Mm-hmm. There are, it's kind of, you know, tailor-made for believers. but at the same time, it's very profound. There's a lot of stuff in there that I really love. The Bible is my number four.
But you had read it already when you were with that Bible camp guys, right?
No, I mean, that's why I read it. It was because of those Bible camp guys. For those of you that don't know...
How many times have you read it?
Once or twice. I mean, cover to cover, not... I mean, individual chapters, like, multiple times, but, you know, if I was going to say, how many times did I read the whole thing? Maybe once or twice.
So, let's just say you read it twice. Did it have a different impact on you the second time?
Not necessarily. I think it was...
Okay.
For the most part... descriptor, like this, there was more of a description than anything else. Like, meh, blah 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 was begat so and so, and that person begat so and so. It was just more of a lot like boring shit. But still, it was a great book. I have to give it credit for being life changing. Number three. The book is called Discourse on the Method. The author's name is Descartes. René Descartes set out... He was a philosopher, and people call him the author or like the the person who invented the father of atheism. Which isn't fair. I don't feel it's fair. He thrived in a time of religiosity. And so the Discourse on Method was more of a, let's set out to prove that God exists. But in proving, the irony, and this is really in the true sense of the word irony, as he's trying to prove that God exists, he invents... in quotes, atheism. In this discourse is where he says the famous words, I think, therefore I am. And he says that in trying to prove that God exists. It's like, okay, look, let's just relax. Imagine that the world as you know it, but let's try and figure things out. Have you ever had a dream that was so real that you didn't know that it was a dream? And when you woke up,
That's every dream.
And when you woke up, you realized, oh, it was just a dream. I didn't know that was so real. How do you know that your life isn't that? How do you know that this isn't just a dream?
Like Matrix.
Yeah. So he's like, well, I'll tell you what. How do you not imagine that everything that you know is real or not real? How do you know it's not real? How do you know it's real? It could be a dream. It might not be. How do you know? What do you know? What can you cement? What could you say, this is real? The only thing that you can say is completely real is the fact that you're thinking those things. The idea that you are thinking that this is real, this is not real, the idea that you're thinking, that's real. And if you can say that you think, if you can say that you think, then you know that you exist. And that's where the idea, I think, therefore I am, comes from.
Is that existentialism philosophy?
Well, the irony...
Yeah, it sounds like it to me.
The irony is that he was trying to prove that God exists. And in doing so, proved... supported atheism. Because you got to think things through. Anyways, that was one of my favorite books. That was an awesome book.
Okay.
This number two comes The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins, where he calls into question Christianity. And I have to
what was the name
God
of
the Delusion.
The God Delusion. Oh, I heard of that one.
And number one, I'll throw Chuck Palahniuk. Fight Club. Fight Club is one of the best books I've ever read.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He also did No Country for Iggy, Old Men.
You know, I heard that the author's father was murdered by white supremacists.
No. Whoa. The author's, you mean of Fight Club?
Yeah, the author, his father, was murdered by white supremacists.
No, the guy who wrote Fight Club, his father was murdered by an ex-wife, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was, like, in a cabin, and he was with his, like, new girlfriend, and the other woman came back and murdered them all.
Damn. He was pissed. Hell hath no fury.
All right, two's up.
Oh, holy cow. Roy. All right, that would be me. All right. Mine is The Zen Way to the Martial Arts by Tyson Deshimaru.
Very nice.
So in this, it's like, it's lessons from... like a Zen Buddhist type of guy who's also a warrior. He's a between a samurai and a Buddhist. Like, doesn't want to fight, is all about peace, but if, when it comes down to it, it's life or death, then he will fight to the death. But if it's just some drunk guy pushing you around, it's like, be the better person and walk away and to abandon the ego. Next is Don't Make Me Think by Steve Krug. It's a user experience book. It was my first book that I read about what exactly user experience is. You know, you sit down, you show people a product, and you get their feedback. You give them a task, like, show me how you get from A to G, and tell me what it was like when you clicked every button and what it did, and just listening to the person as they talk about your product, what they love and what they hate, so you can make improvements on it. Next is Highlander, The Path by Rebecca Neeson. So this is set in, I think, in the 12th century. Duncan goes to Tibet, and he meets this Buddhist monk. And Duncan's tired of the game of taking heads. He just wants to live a life of peace. And he meets a girl there in this town. But there's this Genghis Khan
type Genghis Khan type of guy who's like they say is almost 7 feet tall. He wants to invade this town, this little village, and Duncan's telling him, listen, dude, while Duncan's getting lessons from this Buddhist guy, he's telling him, dude, you need to get ready. Get your people ready to fight because this guy's coming. This guy's like, why do you want to fight? Search in yourself. Is this fight about fighting him or is there something, a war in you or something you're trying to kill? Blah, blah, blah. So that was really good. The next is The Art of War by Sun Tzu. And very fascinating book about, you know, when you're engaging the enemy, you want to take the high plank because that way you can attack them from different angles. I was thinking, oh man, that's. And when you have an army and, you know, you give the army an order and they laugh and giggle, you need someone in command of that troop. And if they still laugh, you tell the commander, listen, you need to get your army in line. If they laugh again, kill the commander. And it'll show the rest of the, it'll put the rest of the troop in line. And you put in a new commander. And that commander knows that if he fails, that he's going to die too. So you need to get your house in order. So, so that was just a few things. But great book. I highly recommend it. My number one is Way of the Peaceful Warrior, a book that changes lives by Dan Millman. The story is this guy in college, he's a gymnast and he's so good he's about to go to the Olympics. he sleeps around and he's like gets top scores when he does his gymnastics and he's driven, but yet he's miserable. And he meets this guy. I forgot the name of his teacher. But his teacher asks him and says, okay, so what do you do? Gymnastics. What do you want to do next? I want to go to the Olympics. What do you want to do after that? I don't know. I'll make money. And then what do you want to do after that? I'll meet this girl. And then I get married. And then kids. And blah, blah, blah. He goes, and then what? He goes, that's it. He goes, exactly. What have you accomplished? You've just filled out a process in your life. You took this A, B, C, D, to Z. You're following his steps, dude. What is it that you want to do? And he's actually like, who the F are you, man? You're fucking a mechanic. Who are you to tell me? But there's something about that, what that guy said, that struck a nerve in them. And so this guy, this teaches him how to get rid of this thing that's your shell and just, you know, be who you are. And so he says, you know what? I got it. Thank you. And he moves on. He didn't make it to the Olympics, but he married the girl he's supposed to. And him, that girl, end up divorcing. And they meet up again. And he's an older man now. And he's open. His mind is open to this guy's teachings. And he realizes who he is. He shed this skin. That's this shell.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. They made a movie. It sucked.
Of what? The Way of the Future Warrior? Sucked.
The Way of the Peaceful Warrior.
Huh.
Yeah, they made a movie. It sucked.
Well, who was in that movie?
No one that I remember.
Okay.
Yeah. But I always pictured that maybe, I want to say, was Nick Nolte? I want to say, Art, that Nick Nolte was in. He played that teacher.
Oh, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure it was Nick mentor. Nolte.
Yeah. But, yep, there you have it.
All right, then. So, you want to discuss this any further, or should we move on to the top five TV shows?
It's up to you guys.
Where are we time-wise?
Let me see here. I am at
21.
Yeah, 21 minutes.
All right. Where you guys want to go?
Keep going. I'm going to just go ahead and say my top five TV shows, okay?
Okay, so I guess we're doing TV shows.
Mm-hmm, here we go.
All right, we're on to part four. Wait, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay.
Okay, number five.
Here we go.
Battlestar Galactica. It was a reboot from 2000. It was a reboot of the 1978 TV show, rebooted in 2004. And it is in the course of four seasons, which I think spanned about 6 years, Battlestar Galactica became this type of TV show that turned a tragedy into entertainment, because the subject matter was the destruction of humanity, and we had already experienced a little bit of that with the tragedy of 9/11, because we saw that as a terrorist attack. They decided to use the attack of the Cylons against humanity as that 9/11, but in the scope of them destroying all of humanity and humanity becoming almost extinct. So the fleet basically spends the next 4 years looking and searching for Earth, and the conclusion that it reached was one of those satisfying moments of television where I thought to myself, holy cow, the show from beginning to end was brilliant. It was brilliantly acted. All the scripts were perfect. All of the set designs as well as special effects were... they surpassed anything from Star Trek to Star Wars, in my opinion. And overall, the movie did the one thing that is very difficult to maintain in science fiction, which is it kept all of its subjects, all of their characters, human. Even the Cylons were looked at as human beings. Humanity was always the question of the show. So number four, Cheers. I think Cheers is without a doubt one of the best comedies ever. I think that it was always well written. All of the characters were beautiful characters, and I personally think that there wasn't a better concept ever achieved than a bunch of people in a bar having whatever hours that they spent fucking around with each other. You know, like their lives were always intertwined. By the fact that they always had this place to call their own. Cheers was the bar. And I don't think that have we ever seen another show where it takes place in a bar? I don't think so, not in my opinion. Okay.
And everyone knew their name.
Everybody knew their name. Number three, Seinfeld. I don't know why I consider that Seinfeld as one of the best things on television, but it is, because everything that they did was awkward, terrifying, terrible, and not very interesting. In fact, the show is about a bunch of people who are not nice, and yet you wanted to see what they were up to every week. They were characters within ourselves, and we accepted them because they did the awful things that all of us are capable of doing. Number two, Twilight Zone. The only reason why I think Twilight Zone is one of those shows that has to be regarded as great is because...
the original?
Yeah, the original. It's because every time you watch that show, something terrifying happened. Even if it was something that was, you know, beautiful or pretty or not a scary story, was still terrifying in its concept. You had to question what was being presented to you on the screen every week. And you were always the victim at the end because you either felt pity for what happened to the person that you were watching on screen, or you felt pity for yourself because you were depressed by what happened to the people on screen. Number one, MASH. Yes, once again a cliche, but MASH was that one show that it sort of like said, look, we're in a fucked up situation. No one is getting out of this alive, and we're trying to make you laugh. And in the end, when everybody went home, You sort of felt like, oh, that's great. I can go home too. And then here's the problem. You unfortunately didn't know where your home was. You always thought that that camp, those people, was your home. So those are my top five.
Whoa. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, everybody.
I knew.
Good night, everybody.
Wowee.
I knew where my home was.
What'd you say, Mike?
Make it quick.
Attention. Choppers. Oh, good old radar.
Make it quick, Mike.
Make what quick?
I thought you're five. You're top five.
Oh, I should go fast because you couldn't shut the fuck up? All right, here we go.
Got you there, Art.
This is one of those things. I couldn't come up with the top five. I came up with like a top 14. My honorable mentions.
No, just give us the five.
You can just shut the fuck up. All right, so like, The shows that I thought were awesome that I couldn't put in my top five. Rome. HBO's mm-hmm. Rome.
Oh.
24.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
great show.
Good choice.
Lost.
Mm-hmm.
Lost was great. The X-Files.
Of course.
Community. Awesome show.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
The show Fringe.
Oh, I heard of that.
Amazing show.
Which one?
Fringe.
Fringe.
Oh, Fringe, yeah.
Cowboy Bebop. Amazing animated show.
Huh.
And then Firefly. Firefly is one of my all-time favorite shows.
Oh. I saw through two episodes. I was very entertained. I don't know why I got sidetracked.
And it's only one season. It's only a couple of episodes long. So number five, a show called Sense8. It's a show about a bunch of people across the globe that somehow are connected and that they can experience each other's lives and can interact without ever being near each other. So like a person in China could be in your life right now and could do something, could become you. So like a person that knows Kung Fu, if you're in a fight and you don't know how to defend yourself, that person could become you and fight whoever your adversary is. This is the Wachowski brothers, who were also mm-hmm. the ones who did the Matrix films.
Yeah, they did.
Yep.
And they produced this television show. Amazing show. I loved the show. I was so sad that they canceled it. It only went two seasons.
Is that Netflix?
I think it was Hulu.
No, I think you're right. I think it is on Netflix. I don't know, though. It might be either way. Sense8. Number four, Over the Garden Wall. It was a one-season animated show that was brilliant, the way it was executed. It was about these brothers that... And when you walk into the show, you don't know what's going on. And by the end of the show, you realize everything that's going on. It's a wonderful piece of artistry, animation-wise, and powerful. I don't want to give it away, and I encourage you to watch it. I don't know if you've seen it, Roy. It's called Over the Garden Wall.
No,
I'm sure he hasn't.
No.
Check it out on Hulu. It's like 10 episodes. And they're 10 minutes each. So, like, what did you got to lose? It's very small.
Nothing. Except my virginity.
Yeah.
And what's it called again?
Over the Garden Wall.
Over the Garden Wall. Hulu? I'll check. All right. I'll add it to my
watch. Number three, Louis. Every episode, awesome. That dude knows how to write. The storytelling in the show, Louis... phenomenal. Every time he writes something, it's got depth and meaning, and it relates to me because Louis C.K., same age. We are the same age, both been through a divorce, both a couple of kids. Like, I get him. And so everything he does...
You get caught masturbating too?
Is magic. Yeah, I don't want to talk about that, but yes. Number two, Sherlock. The show Sherlock, every episode is a film. Every episode is like its own movie. There's no throwaway episodes. Everything is awesome. Every time they do a show, it's like watching another... It's like watching the next Star Wars movie. They're not episodes. They're... sequels. So Sherlock, awesome. My number one favorite television show? Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Whoa! Yeah, it is, that's right. That I thought that's what it was going to be for you.
Huh. An amazing storytelling feat. Avatar: The Last Airbender is a heartbreaking show. By the end of that season, by the end of all, it's a show that lasts three seasons. By the end of the third season, you're fully fucking invested in all of those characters. You love everybody. Mm-hmm. It is a show that is so good at telling a story. But it slowly evolves. And so you have to be patient. And you have to be able to, like, I've never found anybody that's been able to sit through it. Because you kind of, like, it's three seasons long. And there's a lot of, like, little stuff in it that you have to sit through. And unless you're committed, you kind of give up easily. I've never had anybody sit through the whole thing with me except my kids. But it's powerful. It's a very powerful, and there's a lot of Buddhist undertones and teachings. It's a fantastic show, and I advise. I recommend it to anybody that is open-minded about trying to find out who they are and how to live life and how to see your fellow man. It's a wonderful show. So, Avatar: The Last Airbender.
I particularly like that episode, The Seven Chakras.
Yeah, I mean, like that represents episode, like the whole show. That's it's a spiritual show. Mm-hmm. Okay, who's next?
That's what I wish The Last Shot I was going to be.
Yes, all right, thank
anyway,
you.
all right, TV shows, here we go. Number five, MV3. It was a TV show in the 80s. I'm sure you guys remember. Music videos.
Oh, music video. And, yeah, okay.
Three. Yeah, Channel 3. I mean, all I knew of music was like when you hear on the radio all the pop stuff. You know what I mean? But this, they did like some, they had some bands I never heard of, some underground. They had the New Wave. They had the English, you know, they played some R&B occasionally. But man, this is like, I've never heard this music. Fine Young Cannibals and The Cure. And I didn't know this guy, this band had a music video where they sang this song. But, you know, but it's placing a face to the song. And it's putting emotion to the lyrics. And, I love that show. It introduced me to the new wave scene. Next is 60 Minutes.
Hmm.
With great interviews, great stories. They're not sellouts. Excellent show. And I guess since I was a little kid, I was hearing that. I guess it's loyalty that I have and now an appreciation. Because I grew up with that show, you know, watching the stories and such. Next is Seinfeld. Man, that show's fucking funny.
Yep.
But they're like the Beatles of comedy.
Yep.
Those four. Whoa, what the hell was that?
I don't know.
Great stories. They could take something, or they could take nothing and make something of it. Fucking, that's great writing. And Kramer and all of you. Elaine was a strong. She was just as equal with the other three. Funny show. And next is Frasier.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, and mom, man, that's an ensemble there. And I get annoyed when people say, "Oh, Friends." I'm thinking, "Oh, fuck Friends." It had its moments. It had a couple of laughs here and there. But as far as the writing and the characters goes, that doesn't even compare to Seinfeld or Frasier. Frasier, great dialogue, great stories, everything. Let me see. And my number one show is The Simpsons.
Hey, that's
1989.
Right.
1989. Yeah, 1989. Fucking Homer. That guy cracked me up, man. Even when I was at my most depressed moments, I'd watch Simpsons and, you know, Bart and Homer. They just, you know, just made me smile. It made me laugh. You know, and I stole all my, I like to say I stole all my jokes from The Simpsons. It had quite an impact on my life. So, yeah, there you have it.
Do you remember?
You got any thoughts?
Do you remember when Friends, the show Friends, was highly successful?
Yeah.
Jerry Seinfeld did a commercial. He was like, hey, everybody, I made the original show about Friends, and I didn't copy off of anybody else. I did the show about
Friends.
And he did that commercial. And then he currently did a show called Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. And he did another commercial. He's like, hey, everybody, remember I did this show, Comedians in Cars, Doing Coffee. There's been a lot of people doing shows exactly like mine. And he starts showing all of these shows, like, hey, here's, like, karaoke car stuff, like, with this dude.
Yep.
And, like, he's showing all these other shows. And he's like, hey, but they all copied off of me, Comedians in Cars, Doing Coffee. Because I was the first one. And so, like, he was the first one to, like, say, I'm an innovator. I'm plowing through the field. And everybody behind me is doing the same thing, getting credit for the stuff I did.
Yeah. Yeah. They should at least give appreciation or credit to him. Just like Tarantino did. Like, I did not do anything original. I just copied from all the other movies I've seen. Yep.
So, yeah. Mm. I mean, I was on the fence. Like, should I put Seinfeld? But Seinfeld was also about nothing. Like, it was basically meaningless. It was a bunch of people that
But they took meaningless and made it funny.
Yeah, it was funny, but it was a bunch of people that didn't care about anybody. So, like, all of the characters weren't likable, and then they created a new genre of, you know. And now, mind you, because one of my favorite shows was Louie, and Louie was a direct result of Seinfeld. But shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, like they take characters that are absolutely not likable. And they try, and they make a show around those people. That's what Seinfeld was. And
yeah, that was that was the direct influence.
While it was funny, I didn't think it was great. I didn't think it was like the greatest show ever because I didn't like those people. It was funny. I mean, it was great and it was culturally influential. But I don't think it was my favorite. But I did have that moment where I was like, should I put this in my top five? But I couldn't.
What's that movie with Jason... not movie. TV show with Jason Bateman.
Ozarks?
Oh, No.
Silver Spoons?
No.
The Hogan Family?
Stop.
No, not the Hogan. Arrested Development. Okay.
Yes.
So, did you find those people, those characters, repulsive, Mike, or are they likable? Because they were repulsive.
Absolutely. Like few shows can do that well, and that was one that did. Mm-hmm. Like The Office was like that. The Office, Parks and Recreation was like that. Mm-hmm. Took a bunch of people that weren't likable and made them likable. So. that's hard to do, but yeah, you can do it.
Hmm.
All right, all right, all right.
Everybody, I've had a great evening. Great talking with you guys about this shit. This was fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Isn't it amazing that The Last Jedi never made it to any of our lists?
I'm shocked. there's gambling going
fuck
on.
Fuck that Last Jedi.
You guys are going to get together on May the 4th to watch Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
Yeah, us guys are.
I noticed. Well, yeah, you did have Star Wars in there, actually. But you didn't have any of the recent Star Wars movies in your top five.
Yeah, you hate movies.
I actually wanted to put Empire Strikes Back on there, but I didn't.
Which that would have been a good movie. I would have agreed with that one.
Yeah,
that was a great movie.
That was pretty good. I really liked that one. I don't know why my heart still likes the Return of the Jedi. Oh well. All right,
everybody.
Great job, guys.
So, Mike, I'll send you the file.
Art, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Thank you very much, Mike. Thank you very much, Roy.
Thanks for indulging our behavior.
Have a good weekend.
Hope you enjoyed it.
Have a good weekend.
You have a great weekend. You stay classy, San Diego.
And see you all soon, and enjoy the quarantine while it lasts.
I'm enjoying it now. All right, everybody.
Good night. All right, I'm stopping recording now.